Okay, so on Kwentong Creatives, medyo obvious naman that we really value learning. You know, I've always been a fan of that student forever mindset. Now you're always trying to learn as much as you can, never being arrogant with the information that you have, diba? So dami ko nang nakausap na creatives. You know, I never feel like I'm an expert in anything. And one of the things that I feel like I really needed to learn was business practice. Alam mo naman, tayong mga creatives, diba? Parang wala masyadong napag-aralang business or finance. So that's something I've always been wanting to learn, no? Parang entrepreneurial skills. But I don't have time to go to business school. You know, it's I got a full-time job. Sobrang busy na nga as is keeping the podcast afloat. And I'm sure a lot of you relate to that, the other things that we wish we could have learned. Which brings me to the sponsor for this episode, Accel Institute. It is where you can learn business from all kinds of world-class entrepreneurs. They have courses that are inspired by the world's best schools and companies, and it's a really convenient and easy way to learn while you're going through your everyday adult life, no? Essentially, para siyang mini MBA. So right now, I'm actually in the middle of a course. I am taking the Film Producing and Financing class by Bianca Balbuena. And it's really a course that I couldn't have taken anywhere else. Bianca shares a lot of valuable real-world experience from her work as a producer. And in the classroom, I'm also sharing the space with a lot of young creatives who want to learn. So it's a good way to build relationships in your industry too. So they actually have a lot of different courses, some of which are fundamentals of business, leadership and soft skills in business, basic investing in personal finance, which I actually do want to take. And this is something that I learned from Nicole Alba, one of our previous guests, a really talented content creator in finance. So visit their website, axelinstitute.org. I'll leave a link in the description below. And just come and join and learn and have that student mindset. Baka maging magkaklase pa tayo in the next few months. And if you do decide to join, use our referral code KC500 when you submit your form on the website for a discount. And I'd like. Hi, I'm Gio Puyat, and this is Kwentong Creatives, a podcast to get to know the stories, strategies, and lessons of Filipino creatives from different fields. Kwentong Creatives is produced by Anima Podcasts. Alright, welcome to another episode of Kwentong Creatives, and I'd just like to greet everyone a happy Philippine Creative Industries Month. It is September of 2023, and we have a very special guest today. He is the principal author of RA11904, or Philippine Creative Industries Development Bill. So we have Congressman Toph de Venecia. I've been wanting to have him on for so long now, pero parang sobrang busy ng trabaho niya, gets ka naman. But I thought the timing was just perfect that for this month, we get Toph on the show. He is a congressman, he is an artistic director of the Sandbox Collective, he's a theater director, a journalist. We talk a lot about his background, a very interesting story on how he went from a child star to a lifestyle journalist to a theater director and finally a congressman who's championing the arts, right? On this show, we always talk about how, you know, the ups and downs of life as a creative in the Philippines, no? And it's the first time we've really had a creative person who has the perspective of someone who works in government, right? Someone who has a seat at the policy table, diba? So, sobrang kakaibang perspective siya. And honestly, it really does fill me with hope that we have someone who's championing the cause of creatives in government. So we cover a lot of practical things here. We talk about how you can engage with the Creative Industries Month, diba? Maraming programs. You have artist residencies, you have grants, you have content contests, even workshops in different sectors, workshops in visual arts, performing arts, audio, digital media. If you do want to check all those out, just visit the website of the PCIM at www.pcim2023.com. We talk about that and how you can engage with it. We talk about the definitions of the creative economy, diba? So alam niyo ba may 73 different creative sectors dito? Napaka-importante din pala sa government yun, defining what exactly falls under the category of the creative economy. So lots of different creative sectors. creative industries here serve as 7% of the GDP of the Philippines, so that's huge. And we also talk about your rights as a freelancer, as stated in the Freelance Protection Bill. So napaka-importante din yun bilang gig economy talaga ang Philippines. But you're always waiting for your next gig, and it's hard to make a living as a freelancer. We've covered that a lot in the previous episodes. And we also talk about a lot of complex topics in the creative economy, mga stuff na wala pang masyadong concrete na solusyon pero kailangan pag-usapan. And one of those is the film industry, diba? Paano ba buhayin yung film industry sa Pilipinas? And one of the things we're looking at is the Eddie Garcia bill as being pushed by Sila Dolly De Leon just to find a more sustainable way of making a living as an actor in this country. We also talk about the importance of intellectual property rights, diba? IP rights, yung mga ownership. And that's about authors of creative works having the ownership and royalties to the things they make. We also touch up on South Korea, kung gaano ka-idol yung ginawa nila. They actually built a roadmap decades ago that championed their creative industries, and now they are reaping the rewards with the Hallyu wave, with BTS, with their K-dramas, everything. So yun, very interesting conversation with Toph. Medyo namulat ako dun sa mga possibilities, diba, of actually making your life as a creative in this country sustainable. He is in his last 2 years of his term, and I really feel that there's like a fire lit up from under him because he keeps saying that the goal is to make the Philippines the number one creative hub in ASEAN by 2030. And it is a lofty goal, but it does fill me with hope that maybe the future of our country is indeed creative. So yeah, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Toph de Venecia. Okay, welcome to another episode of Kwentong Creatives. And today, we have a very special guest, someone I've been wanting to talk to for a really long time now. We have he's a congressman, representative of Pangasinan, artistic director of the Sandbox Collective, and principal author of the Philippine Creative Industries Development Bill. Damn, welcome to the episode of the Venetia.
Thanks for having me, Gio. Hi, mga creatives.
It's probably like a busy month for you, and you probably, you know, answer this question so many times that maybe it's like a good place to start, no? And maybe you can talk to us about Philippine Creative Industry Month.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot. Happy Creative Industries Month to all the creatives out there who are watching, all 7 million Filipinos who are in the creative sector.
7 million?
Yeah, wow. That's based on the latest study that we commissioned with the Philippine Statistics Authority. Creative Industries Month is one of the salient features of the Philippine Creative Industry Development Act. We'll refer to it as PESIDA. That's the that's the short name of it. Or Republic Act 11904. And the goal of Philippine Creative Industry Month, or PESIM. Okay, we'll call it PESIM.
Okay,
The goal of PESIM is really to, really highlight the role of creative industries in nation building and economic growth. And also allow it to be a platform for creators to be able to promote their products, whether in goods or services. And just really mainstream creativity in the whole government and in the whole nation. So yeah, this is actually not the first Creative Industry Month because the bill lapsed into law last year.
Okay.
July 28th, 3 days after the president's first State of the Nation address. And so there wasn't enough time to put together like a creative industry celebration. So it was sort of just like an online thing. Maybe not even a webinar, like a poster that was uploaded. Happy Creative Industry Month. But this year, parang there's a little bit more time and there was budget already that was allocated for it. So we have a nationwide celebration.
That's sweet. Yeah, my producer told me, like, hey, it's Philippine Creatives Month. Like, you know, we should do something. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is the perfect time to get off on the podcast.
I'm
glad you're here.
I know, I'm finally in really beautiful space.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I'm curious, like, why is it, you probably answered it already, but was September like a conscious choice for the month, or did it just kind of align with the timeline?
At least in fashion. They say September is the January of fashion.
Oh, I didn't know actually. Oh.
Yeah, and
why is that?
I have no idea. But if you watch cool. the documentary, about what is that? The fourth Monday in May or fifth? Anyway, the documentary about the Met Gala.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of discussed there that, you know, September is a January of fashion. That's why the September issue is always like the biggest for Vogue and all these international titles. Prior to the enactment of the creative industry law, there is also September as Film Industry Month. That's been in existence, and the Film Development Council celebrates that annually. And then,
I can't believe I don't know that. Oh my gosh. Like, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And apparently, Design Consciousness Week is also in September, as we were talking about.
Which is
earlier,
different from Design Week.
Which is different from Design Week, which is in October. So that's why that's the contribution of Design Center to the celebration of PSEM. And that'll be next week, I think. And so, but it seemed like a good month. And everyone who participated in the committee hearings were in agreement. And so we have the first ever nationwide big celebration of PSEM.
So. That's sweet. It's super crucial, especially I've been seeing with Kwentong Creatives, parang the sense that you belong to a community.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, having like a day or a time frame that you can carve out of the year where you feel like you belong to a bigger group, like it's such a, I don't know, there's like a subtle empowerment to it, you know?
Oh no, for sure. Yeah. I mean prior to the enactment of the law, I mean, there are those spaces and pockets where creatives go and they feel seen, they feel heard, they feel like they belong. Usually happens in creative hubs around the metro. And not just here in NCR, but also in regions as well. Like, of course, in Bacolod, you have Orange Project. And then even in my district in Dagupan, prior to the creative programs that we started implementing, there was a gallery that was maintained by Norma Leongoren, who was like an arts activist and educator, who really tried to empower women artists in Dagupan to like create, and also gave them a platform to be able to showcase their output. And so, yes, whether it's in Bacolod, in Dagupan, in Baguio, which is a UNESCO creative city for craft and folk art, or Cebu, which is a UNESCO creative city for design, or of course now Iloilo, their application for the gastronomy category is pending, and hopefully they get in this year, but lots of gastronomes in Iloilo as well, and of course the Negros Island region. So parang creatives love to sort of percolate towards creative hubs because it's also a place to be able to cross-pollinate ideas and to, you know, over a beer, like, you know, enter into a collaboration or just be inspired in general.
It's kind of like when the best collaborations happen on like a very casual setting.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, mag-meeting tayo and we will do these things. Like, it's kind of organic. No?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I guess with the law, it just really provides finally a formal definition as to who belongs to this neighborhood. It defines what the creative industries are, which people are so or generally confused about,
right,
and it's it's a very dense sector that needs to be demystified and unpacked.
I love that.
Because it aggregates as many as 73 creative industries, believe it or not.
Wow.
So that's a lot, and there are a lot of industries that we don't realize are actually creative based on international frameworks and definitions. You know, in the course of the committee hearings for this bill, which is now a law, we were evaluating which definition we should sort of emulate.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the UNESCO model, and then there's the WIPO model, which is the World Intellectual Property Organization model, which inceptions creative industries as copyright-based industries, which is really another name for creative industries. And then there's the UNCTAD model. And then there's the DCMS model, the Department of Culture, Media and Sports of the UK.
Where these are how different countries define their creative industries.
Different institutions and countries define. There's also orange economy. And so, parang, okay, what definition are we going to use? So, of course, in consultation with all the participants in the committee hearings and with the NEDA, which is the National Economic Development Authority, which is the socioeconomic planning agency of the government. Parang they said, okay, I think what's best for the Philippine context is the UNCTAD model.
Okay.
So the UNCTAD model.
How do you spell that?
What is UNCTAD? UNCTAD. That's United Nations Conference on Trade and Development.
Okay. Yeah.
And so the UNCTAD model, again, aggregates a lot of industries into 9 developmental domains. So what are these 9 domains? I hope I can recall all of it. So of course there's visual art.
You can just edit it in if you forget.
Okay, thank you. So there's visual arts, performing arts, which is closest to my heart because I'm a theater maker. There's design, and then there's publishing and print media. And then there's audio and audiovisual media. Mm-hmm. And then there's creative services. And then there's cultural sites. And then there's traditional cultural expressions. Mm-hmm. And then there's digital interactive media, if I haven't already said that. So that's 9 domains. And then there's a 10th, which is really and others. So in case new creative industries will come out of the woodwork as a result of technology, AI, fourth industrial revolution, Internet of Things, knowledge economy, then they can just be sort of included and they can find a home among those 9 domains. Or if the law is revisited in 5 years, it could be amended. We can propose new domains if need be. So yeah, it's very broad.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that you brought that up, especially the future of creative industries then, which it's like a super, you know, dense topic. But yeah, I do want to circle back to that later because I want to get into the weeds of, you know, the bill and all these other things with the different sectors. But I think maybe let's just go back to like this month, right? What can people look forward to this month? I mean, I read about stuff na yung Malikhaing Pinoy program.
Hmm.
How do creatives who are like listening to this, aside from celebrating the fact that they are, you know, being represented in the government, how can they like engage with it on like a practical like basis? Like while listening to this, like what can I do to engage with the month? Okay.
So what's happening this month? Lots of things, lots of conferences. Actually, if you go to the Philippine Creative Industry Month website, which is PCIM2023.com. You'll see all of the events, and then you'll see all of the exhibits. You'll see all of the lectures and seminars. You'll see all of like the mga trade shows, trade fairs, even shows that are happening across the archipelago. But then the PCIM actually has celebration pillars.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 8 of them that are identified in the website and by the DTI. So you can just find or know more about it there. And then in terms of like what creatives can expect, well, as to what creatives can expect, we're launching a lot of projects and activities that are part of the Malikhaing Pinoy program. So the first is Lunsod Lunsad, which is a competitive grant program for local government units so that if they apply to the DTI, they can get as much as 3 million pesos to fund their creative programs and activities in their own jurisdiction. But of course, it needs to be in line with the goals of the creative industry law, which is really to generate more jobs and revenue and GDP, as well as export. It needs to be able to develop audiences and grow the market and attract investment as well as generate more Filipino IP or intellectual property. So those are the criteria, the indicators for the grant.
So people can apply for this grant, prepare like a pitch and...
LGUs.
LGUs, yeah.
LGUs. So, I mean, the creative organizations or creators can work with the LGUs, mm-hmm. diba, as the entity that actually applies for the grant. And then, this has been rolled out and launched at the PSEM media launch earlier this week. And then we also have the Young Creatives Challenge program, which is also a component of Malikhaing Pinoy that was facilitated, I think, through the office of Senator Aimee Marcos. It's providing grants to creators. Of course, this is a competition format. So if you win, you can get as much as 1 million pesos to fund your original creative content, whether it's a play or a comic book or some kind of app or whatever it is. So that was also launched last Sunday.
And so then age cutoff limit for young?
well, the Philippine definition of youth is 30 and below.
Oh,
but okay. Like in my Young Farmers Challenge bill, we define young as 35 and below. But then if you look at the UN definition of young, it's like 40 and below. So the criteria is there in the PSEM website. So you can just check it out. What else? So we're also launching a Taglay Pinoy program, mm-hmm. which is a content creation grant to local MSMEs. So this is something that we funded through SITEM, and select MSMEs across the country will get branding interventions, whether it's logo or photography, like photos of their products, mm-hmm. or of themselves if they're a service provider, like for example, if they're a dancer or like they're they do live events and they're a wedding photographer or whatever. So there's that. Ang dami, parang there's too many to mention, because not only are creatives being serviced by the law and the Malikhaing Pinoy program, mm-hmm. which is lodged with the DTI, but there are other government agencies that have been there for a while now that are also doing stuff for creatives.
Right.
So, you know, the Film Development Council of the Philippines, for example, they're still providing the grants to filmmakers. They're providing, you know, workshops for script writers, content creators. Recently, I think they funded Meisner workshop for actors. And then of course you have the National Book Development Board. So they recently just implemented the National Book Awards, and then Frankfurt Book Fair is next month. So we're joining as a participant as we normally do. But in 2025 the Philippines will be the guest of honor, and that's something that countries really apply for, and it takes countries maybe more than a decade sometimes to apply. And this is something that's been near and dear to Senator Lauren Legarda's heart.
Uh-huh.
And she's been really lobbying and working with the NBDB to get that Guest of Honor title. And finally, we got it. So NBDB is also now preparing for that. And then, of course, the Expo, the World Expo in Osaka, I believe. It's going to be in 2025. So we're also preparing for that. Because the Dubai Expo in 2020 obviously was delayed because of the pandemic, so it was held just last year, and I was fortunate enough to have been there, and I saw like the Philippine Pavilion. So we need to have a kick-ass pavilion for 2025. So preparations are underway for that, and then just across the government bureaucracy, actually, now that we're starting to mainstream creativity, they're starting to really understand like what it's all about.
I love that.
The impact that it has and how they have to synergize their mandate with the mandate of the law to foster creativity. So I remember when I met with Secretary Cristina Frasco of the Department of Tourism last year, I pitched a creative tourism summit so that we can empower LGUs to leverage on creativity for, you know, creative and cultural tourism, or even for other local governance outcomes that they are targeting, or just empower them in general on how to be more responsive to the needs of our creatives in the barangay and those in the grassroots. And so there's been a lot of back and forths with the DOT, and finally it's happening.
Oh yeah.
Okay. This December. We're gonna have a creative tourism summit, so I'm really excited about that.
You have a busy year.
it's a busy last 2 years for me, because it's my last term. I'm down to my last 2 years of being a congressman, so I just want to make sure that the creative industries will be set up for success.
That's really awesome. I mean, that's why I wanted you on the show, because it's such I don't know, it's like I've been interviewing different creatives, but none were really involved in policy making, you know, and that's really what I wanted to get into the weeds here to talk about. Because I mean, you're seeing it from a totally different perspective. Mm-hmm. And ako naman, I've been there then, complaining about all these other stuff. But walang ganyan, walang ganyan. But as the audience can see, there's so many opportunities. Like, Toph just listed a lot. There are opportunities out there and to be taken advantage of. So, parang, you can go online, check out all the stuff you can do this month. And yeah, there is help in the back. I think that's what... is helpful with like stuff like this, where you can just make people aware of the opportunities, and malaking bagay na yan.
Super. I'm actually really excited for the Fiesta Kuchas. There's a lot happening. I believe the Cebu leg is gonna be this Friday. I won't be there. I'll be there in spirit and virtually, because I'll be in Pangasinan to launch our new museum in the capital in Lingayen. But a lot of Fiesta Kuchas are, which is really a play on Pecha Kucha, which is a concept wherein, you know, creatives get to like jam and collaborate and dialogue. Yeah. Ours is called Fiesta Kucha. So we're going to have Fiesta Kuchas in Cebu, in Davao. I believe there'll also be one in Leyte. Anyway, just across the country, there's so many things happening.
That's an interesting point then, is like you're getting a perspective that's like buong Pilipinas, like regional. Ako, I grew up in Manila. I guess I'm very, you know, in this bubble. But you're looking at, you know, creative industries from all around, right?
Right. You know, and each region has their own comparative advantage. There are certain industries that are stronger in certain regions than they are elsewhere. Like, that's why you have the UNESCO Creative City network, because like cities get to really discern for themselves like what are we good at and what do we want to be known for. So Baguio, Craft and Folk Art, Cebu, Design, that's where all the Kenneth Cobon Pues are. And then Iloilo, which is making a bid for gastronomy this year, because of course they have really good cuisine.
Of course, I've heard you can people call Iloilo the Wakanda of the Philippines.
Really? Yeah. I never heard that before.
Maybe they can make that a thing.
They should make that a thing. But yeah, I mean, you can argue that, you know, you also have strong gastronomy sectors in like Ilocandia and then in Pampanga, and then also in Negros. I mean, they have the best chicken bacolod, right?
Yeah.
So, and then even in Samar.
So, in the sectors you mentioned earlier, Pala, where does food fall under?
Really? Traditional cultural expressions.
Okay.
It's part of that domain. So it's lumped in with arts and crafts. And like, of course, the output of our indigenous peoples and indigenous cultural communities. It's a very big sector. And we're still trying to really capture or define what gastronomy is. A study has been commissioned with the NCCA, and like the initial output has been generated. But then right now we are in the process of deliberating on a gastronomy development bill, in which first we have to define what gastronomy is. Does it correlate with tourism? Does it correlate with diplomacy, or does it correlate with industry? And if it were an industry, who's included? Parang is Jollibee part of gastronomy? Kasi parang, sure, Jollibee is fast food. But because Jollibee has become so globally renowned, like Jollibee has become an icon.
Sobra, yeah.
Diba? So parang there is a cultural element to Jollibee already. So you have to be able to identify, is Jollibee part of gastronomy? Are the carinderias part of gastronomy? So can you imagine if all of those different components or subsectors were, then it would be such a huge sector.
Yeah.
And like, how do you develop each one, or how do you address the pain points and the value chain of this particular field?
That's such an interesting conversation. And I also have that a lot in my family, because I'm actually a Daza. That's my Lola is Nora Daza, who wrote that cookbook,
Let's
Cook with Nora. And my mom recently kind of, you know, revived it and put all the recipes back together.
Mm-hmm.
But she always denies that it's a Filipino cookbook. She's like, it's not a Filipino cookbook because there's so many recipes from Chinese and like other Western nations. But in a way, it kind of is. Like, it's such a mix of...
We're a melting pot, eh.
Oh, nga.
So, parang it's hard to ascertain like what is Filipino insofar as it being, you know, indigenously ours, or like endemic to our culture and our heritage. I don't know if you saw that episode of Taste the Nation with Padma Lakshmi.
No. Oh, wait. I did see the series, but I'm not sure if I saw that particular episode.
There's an episode on Filipino cuisine, of course, focusing on Filipino restaurants in the Bay Area.
Yes, I did see it.
It's such an emotional experience for me, like watching it. I mean, and listening to all these like second and third generation Filipinos trying to carve out their own space in the global culinary scene.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're coming from... and. There are interviews of the first generation Filipinos who migrated to the United States, and parang there was a shame in so far as the celebration of their cuisine, because they would associate Filipino food with being brown. And so there is this effort to reclaim from succeeding generations, you know, establishing, you know, Pinoy pride. Again, rightfully saying, and that, you know, this is Filipino, and this is our culture, this is our heritage, this is our pride. And yeah, I mean, that's why now you have a Michelin star restaurant in the States called Kasama. And hopefully more Michelin star restaurants if and when we're able to bring the Michelin consortium here to evaluate our restaurants. Because I mean, already we have, you know, Toyo, you know, being part of 50's Best. And then there's another one, right? The one of, it's not Metronome. It's also there. Matisse.
Yeah.
So you have Toyo, Matisse, and of course, Curator got into the 50's Best also for, you know, bars. So it's like, you know, we have a lot of really good F&B establishments here. But then it does cost a lot of money to bring in the Michelin consortium. I was initially told it costs about like 100, 200, 300 million pesos, thereabouts.
Yeah.
But countries pay for that and subsidize that because they're able to leverage Michelin star restaurants for tourism.
I was wondering why, because I just came from Bangkok and I was like, daming Michelin dito, tapos parang sa atin, I don't know.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of Bangkok, there's a Thai model for gastronomy development wherein they actually give support to Thai nationals abroad who will put up Thai restaurants.
Oh, that's great.
Because the first contact of foreigners to Thai culture is really through their food. Eventually, as you become a fan or an avid consumer of Thai cuisine, eventually you would want to come to Thailand. And experience, you know, the sights and sounds and of course the food. And so, I mean, that's also something that we can do, diba, in the Philippines.
Again, as part of this concerted
effort to develop gastronomy. And by the way, that's just one of the 73 industries.
I find it so interesting how you focus so much on definition, whereas like someone would be like, yeah, whatever, gastronomy, like that's obvious what it is. But if you're enacting it into policy and law, you really have to be really specific how you define things.
For sure.
And I think I want to segue into more of your work as a congressman. So I'm curious about context now.
Okay.
We got off into talking about the Creative Industries Month, but I'm curious about you then, Toph, because I remember you from college, Theater Org, Blue Rep, and Ian, I know you're a passionate artist in your own right. Can you tell us about like what was your like intro into the creative arts? Like when did you first, what were you a fan of when you were young, and like how did you get into creatives yourself?
Okay, well, actually, I would say that I have a lot of first-hand experience in the creative industries and in several fields, not just one.
Mm-hmm.
I started out, well, me as a kid, you know, I would have, you know, painting lessons, you know, watercolor with E.R. Tagle, and then eventually I did like oil painting.
Oh, okay.
But I was discouraged because after producing so many artworks and I put up an exhibit, my mom just sort of laid claim to all of them and didn't pay me for it. So I was like, oh.
Oh,
so
mom, was gonna, more than a hobby, like you were going to exhibit then.
Yeah. So I was discouraged from continuing painting. But I remember in our travels, like my parents would always go take me to see Broadway or West End shows. I wouldn't always be awake. I'd actually fall asleep. But still, I mean, sort of, it was like planting seeds
in
my head. And then when I was 5, I got into showbiz. So I was a child actor for 6 years.
No way. Okay.
I did some sitcoms in GMA and some films and even some commercials. So I was exposed to the showbiz world early on.
Did they have yes acting back then? Sorry, it's just like a thing I always see in advertising.
Sorry, what is yes acting?
When they try to choose different actors, and then it's just like a fast way to shift through different actors, but they're saying yes in different emotions. Like, yes, happy, yes, mad, yes, scared. It just looks kind of silly.
I don't remember much of the craft of acting from Mia Chaz. Like, for me, it was memorizing my lines.
Yeah.
Just sort of delivering it, and I don't think I was a good emoter. Like, I remember this GMA special where I had to cry, but the tears just weren't falling. So anyway, I can expound on that later because I did get into theater eventually.
Okay.
So I was in showbiz, and then my family also is in showbiz because my grandfather is the founder of Sampaguita Pictures.
Ooh, okay.
Which is like the MGM of the Philippines back in the day, alongside LVN. And so, you know, Dolphy, Nora Honor, Susan Roses, Gloria Romero, Eddie Garcia, they
crazy.
All...
Would you visit like film sets when you were young? Or?
I think I wasn't alive yet during the heyday of Sampaguita.
Okay.
Like they were omnipresent during the golden age of Philippine cinema. But then when the taste and preferences of the audience were shifting towards like the bomba films.
Mm-hmm.
This is what my parents would tell me.
Interesting.
Or my mom in particular about my lolo. Parang my he didn't want to go with the flow, and he was very passionate about producing like the wholesome films that Sampaguita was producing, and then eventually it led to the decline.
Documentary on this or something.
I know. It's actually my dream to produce a documentary about Sampaguita.
Hey, if you need a director.
Noted. My family's always been in the creative space. Mm-hmm. And then in elementary, I joined our school paper in CSA, Agustinian Mirror. And I was a sports editor. Weird. Because I'm so not into sports. But I was able to leverage that when I transferred to Ateneo for high school. I joined Highlights magazine. Then I was like a features writer, and then a features editor, and then associate editor in my senior year. And then when I moved to college in Ateneo, I applied for the Gaidon. But parang ang daming mga requirements, and I just didn't have the bandwidth to like, you know, write all these features or come up with an editorial calendar or even research trivia about each of the editors as part of the application process. So parents like, you know what? I'll just forgo the whole publishing thing. And I entered student government. But then, but in 2004, I was also in my freshman year then, my sister passed away. And I remember parang I had this whole carpe diem, seize the day, no day but today kind of mindset. And so I do remember actually being offered by a newspaper to be a columnist for them, but I said no. Kasi para I was thinking, ano namang keiko for me to write something that people would want to read what I write. Uh-huh. But yun nga, parang when my sister passed, I was like, well, you know what? I should just go for all these things that normally I shy away from. So I was such an insecure middle child. And so, yeah, I delivered my eulogy, and then Philippine Star requested to publish the eulogy, and I obliged. And then soon after, I got an offer from Tita Milet Manangkil of the Philippine Star to be a columnist for Young Star. And I said yes. And so that started me off my publishing career. Wow. From 2005 to 2017. So, yeah, worked in Chalk Magazine as a lifestyle editor, and then worked in Circuit as a columnist, and then Young Star as a contributing editor. I worked closely with Raymond Ang, John T. Cruz. Those are my editors. And yeah, I mean, I made a lot of my connections and friends really in publishing. Mm-hmm. And since I was in the media side, you get to meet so many different creatives.
Yeah.
So I sort of knew a little bit about, you know, music and visual arts and fashion and all those other creative industries. And then I got into theater also.
Mm. So how did that happen? Like performing arts, like how while you're in publishing? Like.
Also after when my sister passed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it was one of those things na parang I remember, or I actually did realize that she was doing a summer workshop with Repertory Philippines. I just wasn't involved with what she was doing because I was doing my own thing. So she actually got into theater even before I did. And then I remember watching Little Shop of Horrors in 2004. And I was so excited about what I saw. It was an absurd kind of black comedy. And really catchy songs. I saw it in Repertory Philippines, and I was like, wow, like, I don't know, like, I was just so enamored by what I saw. And so months after, like, yeah, when my sister passed, I joined a summer workshop with the Repertory Philippines. And I also joined a photography workshop.
Wow.
But you can imagine which one really resonated with me. It's like, I mean, I did complete the photography workshop, but I didn't push through with photography. But in theater, that's sort of where I found my groove.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I started out as an actor, and then doing production work for Blue Rep, and then I became a director. I got my start in Blue Rep, and then eventually, when I graduated, some friends of mine wanted to put up a theater company. So we started Nine Works Theatrical like almost 15 years ago with our first musical, Songs for a New World. And then 5 years later, I wanted to do a different kind of theater production. And that's why we put up Sandbox Collective. So those are sister companies that I co-manage. And then, yeah, basically, wow. I'm just dipped in so many
fields.
What a
crazy story, man. I mean, yeah, I want to go back to Sandbox Collective later because we did have Reba Tadere on the show a few episodes ago, and I really enjoyed the production you guys put together. But man, oh my gosh, like, marami talaga. Marami kang, you know, creative fields right now. And I guess I'm really curious when lumabas yung parang fork in the road that an opportunity to get into politics. Kasi parang, you know, other people, it's like, you know, they would stay in publishing forever, they would do in theater forever, and you probably had that option. But I'm just curious, like, was there a spark where you were like,
I have the opportunity to make a change in the creative industries, and how did that like manifest for you?
Okay, so I also come from a political family, obviously. My dad was Speaker of the House for like 5 terms, and then my mom was Congresswoman for 2 terms. And in 2015, we were having this conversation about me possibly entering into politics, and they've been trying to convince me for the longest time. Mm. Incidentally, my course in college was political science.
Oh, okay.
But my freshman year, I was actually in management, and then I soon realized I'm not good in math. And so I wanted to shift courses.
A lot of creative journeys that's somewhere in the path.
I know, right? And then, I don't know, I somehow shifted to political science with no intention of joining politics someday. I'm kind of weird kasi. So it's more of, I just wanted to understand what my parents had been doing, because I sort of grew up in it. Mm-hmm. Like, even as a kid, I was being paraded in a stroller while my dad was a congressman. And I grew up campaigning for my dad when he would run for Congress, or even when he ran for president in 1998. And I was also a child star then. Parang I was campaigning and singing My Heart Will Go On. Like,
what a scene, man.
You know, in all these like campaign rallies. Or if not, My Heart Will Go On, Chumbawamba.
That's a hard song, Chumbawamba.
I know, it's so random.
It's a 90s, man.
I guess I just wanted to understand what they were doing. And I actually quite enjoyed the course. Those that are specific to political science, I got A's and B pluses. But the general subjects, if it was philosophy, I'd do well. If it was theology, not so well. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how I ended up saying yes, because they had been trying to convince me for the longest time. But I think maybe something just clicked insofar as like the talking points that my mom used. The parang, okay, I mean, you know, you're an artist, and then parang you can use this as a platform to be able to you know, support and champion, you know, arts and culture. And then parang I was thinking, okay, well, you know, in our district, we have Manawag. And Manawag is the home of Our Lady of Manawag. That's the crown jewel of our tourism. And parang I can, you know, sort of use my creativity to be able to prop up like tourism in the district. And that's never really been the district's thing.
Yeah.
Before I started, like, you know, really prioritizing and like making it tuto. And then, I don't know, like, I think things just sort of fell into place. Mm-hmm. So I do remember seeing Senator Mig Zubiri like years after we first met. And I remember after an event, I wasn't in politics yet, after an event in Manila Pen, we were hanging out at the lobby. He was like, oh, when are you running? I was like, I'm never gonna run. Never say never, because look at me. And I was like, huh? Okay, I didn't understand what he meant up until it happened. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, here I am now.
Yeah.
But, you know, admittedly, my first term, like, I was so overwhelmed as a first-time politician. There was just so much happening all at the same time. And, you know, I always say that, you know, if you're a congressman, you're always balancing the four P's. There's policy, there's programs, there's politics, and then there's press.
Four P's, okay.
Which also sort of, I guess, correlate now with social media, because they're also right. Part of like communication. So I didn't know what to focus on in my first term. I was just so deeply overwhelmed. And I felt...
Around what year was this?
2016. Parang I felt also some kind of imposter syndrome.
Right.
If I were to champion, for example, arts and culture, how do I even go about that?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a lawyer.
What a task.
I don't understand all of the laws. Like, I didn't understand the Cultural Heritage Act, RA10066, or all these other charters creating and establishing all the cultural agencies. I didn't get any of that. And then to be the one to champion it in such a huge platform, such as like Congress, parang without fully understanding it, parang I don't know, I just kind of shied away from doing that up until the pandemic.
Really?
It was okay. Only then when, because of need and necessity, and that somebody needed to speak up so that our sector would not be forgotten, that's the one that sort of really lit a fire in me. Wow. And that's how I also discovered creative industries. Like, I had been working in it for decades, but I didn't even know the term creative industries.
I think a lot of us don't, honestly.
It was Paolo Mercado of the Creative Economy Council of the Philippines, which is an NGO that's been like advocating for this for decades.
Oh, okay.
He was the one who sort of like opened my mind to creative industries. And so I would say if not for him, like, I don't know, baka we wouldn't have stumbled upon this like framework and then this like definition and also how to properly develop the sector and, you know, mainstream its contributions to our economy and how, and to nation building and all of that. So yeah, it's fairly recent.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So it seems like you've found your stride. I mean, when I see you in interviews, even when you talk about what's going on, parang it's all on point, you know. And I'm just curious, like, how, you know, that transition for you was, parang coming from someone who, you know, like was in publishing, and you're dealing with completely different people than when you're in Congress, diba? So. Maybe you can describe for us, like, what's like the day-to-day like of like when you're working as a congressman and you're trying to get into like the details of bringing something into law. Parang where did you even begin? So you had that fire lit under you, like paano bang, like when you speak up in the House of Representatives, parang
I think it's important to have a support group. Uh-huh. One, two. I didn't have mentors up until I decided to like affix the mentor title to certain personalities who I feel could guide me and could give me advice, career advice, or give me input as to how I can go about pursuing certain advocacies.
And Paolo Mercado was one of them.
I would say, I'm probably one of his biggest disciples now. But then in Congress, you know, you have Congresswoman Stella Kimbo, who is our economist, and she was the one who taught me the whole concept of like GDP and gross national product and all of these economic terms. Again, I didn't take that up in college. And Sharon Garin, who is not an economist, but she's an excellent policymaker and politician, and she taught me how to be aggressive.
I see. Yeah.
And if there's something that you want, you really have to just go for it, and you know, stop at nothing. Uh-huh. And I had to be super aggressive to be able to get this creative industry law passed because it was not a priority.
Yeah. I imagine it's easy for your voice to get drowned out.
It's so easy for your voice to get drowned out in a spectrum of competing commitments and competing advocacies. I remember when we were discussing the Bayanihan law and we had to identify sectors that would receive ayuda or you know, cash support from government. You know, freelancers were nowhere in the equation, but I really had to fight up until I got it to a point where it was already in the mix. But unfortunately, because of a tight fiscal space, parang inclusion of one is the exclusion of another. And parang because freelancers would get this ayuda, like another sector would not.
Yeah, hirap.
So, you know, I had to just really go for it, basically. And yeah, parang I think with having the right mentors in place, with having a support group, and in this case, this was the block that I formed, which is called the Arts, Culture, and Creative Industries Block, or ACHIB for short. Parang I found strength and comfort in numbers.
Yeah.
parang we would file resolutions together, we would advocate for stuff together. I found my tribe.
Yeah.
And then if I would deliver a privilege speech, they would be the ones interpolating, because if not, no one else would. Because again, parang it really wasn't high in the parang the hierarchy of needs of or even hierarchy of awareness of a lot of my colleagues. And then yeah, just of course having a good team. And you know, I had my team of my policy team that would help me draft, you know, all of these like bills and resolutions, and be doing follow-ups with all of these government agencies for their position papers, and then also involving the private sector. I would say that if not for the National Live Events Coalition, the Philippine Fashion Coalition, Creative Industries Philippines, and all these groups that were formed during the pandemic, if I didn't have their support and they weren't actively, you know, taking to social media, changing their profile pictures, being the ones attending the hearings, not just in the lower house, but also in the Senate, and then going on interviews in the media to really enlighten people about like the pandemic and the impact that it has on creative industries. Parang if not for them, then all of this wouldn't have laddered up to RA 11904's enactment. So I think if anything, going back to like that whole decision to like take the plunge and, you know, leap into the void, it was what one of my personal mentors, Tessie C. Coson, because I worked in SM after college, I did fashion marketing for Boys Teens Wear, which eventually became SM Youth.
Mm-hmm.
Parang she told me shortly after I won my first election, she said, sometimes it's not about following your passions, but also just channeling your passion in what you do.
Yeah.
So, okay, it could be quite controversial, but I sort of saw the value in it, knowing that I was now in this different space,
yeah,
in this different field. So being in that field, actually Sandbox went into hiatus. We didn't produce anything for a good 2 to 3 years, mm-hmm, because I was focused on, you know, just trying to be a policymaker.
Yeah.
And so obviously, it is an opportunity cost. Doing this prevented me from being able to do that.
Yeah.
But I think I soon realized that I should always, and this is something that I also learned in one of my interviews before, when I was in the media, and I interviewed Teresa Herrera for my column for Young Star. We eventually ended up getting for Every Brilliant Thing in Sandbox. That, you know, there are so many different sides to you as a person, and you have to be able to nurture all those sides of you, or else you'll be imbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's soon that I realized that parang I need the creativity and the art in my life. And so even if it's going to be difficult, like, I'm going to find a way to balance all, because my policy work informs my creativity, and my creativity informs my policy work.
Yeah, that's such a common thread. I mean, from talking to different other creatives, it's such a big part of their identity as a creative, and the things they do aside from their main quote unquote thing, right?
Yeah.
But I'm curious, kasi in your end, parang you pull from all these disciplines of creativity, and it applies to your job as a policymaker. Mm. I'm curious nga, have you picked up on, I don't know, other skills from being in publishing, like public speaking, communication, and how does that translate to being creative with like good governance and stuff?
Okay, so siguro if I pursued acting, I would have more confidence to be able to, you know, speak in public fora, mm-hmm, and be able to maybe wing it without necessarily having a lot of substance or knowledge. But I think it's easier for me now that I'm 7 years into the job and I have absorbed and been a sponge to a lot of information. So I have a lot of stock knowledge that at least I have that. And then the over and above that I have to do, reading all this literature and participating in all these committee hearings, I'm able to provide a deeper insight to when, you know, I speak at these public fora.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, parang ang tukso nga sa akin ng mom ko is that before, you know, I would struggle just to get past my initial public speaking engagements.
Yeah.
Or my speeches would be very short and be very terse. Ngayon, sing haba ko na magsalita yung dad ko. Because I just have so much to say.
Yeah.
And parang each platform is an opportunity to be able to educate or inspire. And so, but again, I think it's really more of the directing skill that I was able to bring with me to my policy work, because obviously as a director, you're managing a lot of moving parts and you have to make sure like everything is working. So I'm able to bring that skill over to my policy
even
work.
Even managing egos, like socially.
Managing egos also. Diba? Especially if you're in politics, there's just so many egos that you have to balance. So that's been very helpful. And for me, really, my time as a lifestyle journalist, when I was interviewing people for my column or writing cover stories for magazines, parang Tita Millet and that whole publishing side of me taught me the value of curiosity.
Yeah.
And so when I interact with people or talk to my constituents, parang I never run out of things to say because there's just so much to know. And I have this desire to want to find out. And so every conversation always starts about like a superficial level. And then if you are able to ask and prod and excavate, then you can go to the heart and depth of the matter. I mean, that's basically the foundation of journalism.
Yeah.
Or even in lifestyle journalism, you have to ask the right questions. And so that's something that's been very helpful for me. But also, when I participate in all these like fora or committee hearings in Congress, even my questions are so different from that of my colleagues because I come from a creative mindset or perspective. So, for example, when I'm interpolating the budget of, you know, the Department of Tourism or the budget of the Department of Trade and Industry or whatever government agency this is, I'm always coming into it from a creative perspective. So, well, it's nice to know na parang the government agencies find that refreshing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like always, like kunwari with DFA, they get bombarded with questions about passports, questions about like overseas workers. Mm-hmm. And then they come in with like questions about cultural diplomacy, questions about the Centro Rizal, which is, it's sort of like a hub, a cultural hub that is found within each of our foreign service posts across the world.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would come in with like, you know, soft power, you know, like conversations and questions about soft power. Is there a roadmap that we can follow so that we can really raise the profile of the Philippines in the global landscape? And how can this soft power roadmap leverage on creativity and our creative industries the way that South Korea has successfully done? So, yeah, parang I guess it's just like, it's just all of these things have synergized to make me who I am and what I do today. And so, yeah, I don't think energy is ever wasted. And I would say, even my act, sorry, marami kasi yung hugot sa pagiging actor.
Go.
Even, I wouldn't say that parang my actor, all the energy that I spent on acting was wasted.
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually, it was acting that led me to production work and directing.
Right.
Parang that was my entry point. And I soon realized that what I loved was not necessarily the craft of acting, but the community behind it. And I just wanted to be part of the community.
Yeah.
And somehow, I found myself thriving in the behind-the-scenes space. So.
And you also have a go-to karaoke song for My Heart Will Go On.
I guess. I don't know how I reached that really high note, but somehow I did.
Well, yeah, I think usually I would put some advice questions towards the end, but since we're kind of in this topic already, of talking about getting people together, rallying people for a cause, public speaking, it seems like you kind of found your stride as a leader. I mean, it's really a leadership position, but that's essentially what directors do then.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious for like, what kind of advice could you give to people who are very, you know, have that imposter syndrome with being confident about their decisions and delegating it to people? Yeah, because I remember even in Sandbox Collective, you gave a short speech before we all watched. And, you know, I just thought, I wonder if that, I mean, that was a pretty good short, you know, speech. And speech making is like an art. There's already a craft to it. But yeah, like for other creatives who are struggling to like take a leadership position, like what helped you to get into that role?
What advice? You know what? You just have to go through the motions. You just have to go through it. I never really considered myself a leader, but I always somehow found myself in leadership positions. I don't know why. Because even in grade school and high school, I would be class president. So I just have this proclivity towards like bringing people together and making things happen. But I guess something that I learned later on after all of these leadership opportunities is that you have to have the scrappiness. You need to be able to just like I said, kanina, even use the word aggressiveness. Like you just have to be able to know your goal, know what you want, and just ascertain the ways to be able to get from point A to point B. And then, of course, working with people to do that. But like for me as a director, like my mantra is that it's okay not to know. And then hopefully that can be the springboard for you to want to find out. So I guess like lifestyle journalism kind of feeds into that mantra also. Because you know, as a journalist, you show up, you know, maybe a thing or two about your subject, but you get to know more when you interview them and converse with them, right? So
it's like the pursuit of the questions.
Yeah, with directing, siguro early on, you would sort of affix this pressure to yourself that, oh, you have to know everything because you are the authority. And then people come to you and you have to be able to provide answers. But then eventually, when you become more comfortable with yourself and your space, I wouldn't say legacy, it's too young to talk legacy, but at least your track record and with repetition and having put more under your belt than when you're a neophyte and just starting, parang it's, you know, really just finding that confidence to say, oh, I don't know, but hey, let's find out together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I suppose that's also a refreshing perspective to have if you're, for example, in government. Of course, there's a great degree of competency. I'm not saying that that's not needed. Of course, you need competency to be able to be in government because, you know, you're running the country, right? You have constituents that you have to service. But then it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to say that you don't know right now, but you want to find out. And then you open yourself up to you open yourself up to knowing and having these opportunities to get to know. Whether it's asking experts, tapping them for the mm-hmm. expertise, or you know, even just actually my favorite thing to do when I'm in the district is talking to our local MSMEs.
Mm-hmm.
On a regular day, my schedule would be like, you know, I'd meet with 3 to 4 small businesses with the owners, and you know, I do my whole lifestyle interview thing so that I can help promote them in my Facebook page and in my social media platforms. And then I also give them advice. I learned so much from just like talking to people, and that sort of informs my understanding of all of these like sort of demystifies all of these like complex policies that I have to wrestle with in my capacity as a policymaker. Even in talking to somebody about like yung away nila sa barangay or yung away nila magpamilya or may nakawan ako ng kapitbahay ko and all these things. It's these little things that sort of ladder up to opportunities where you can actually do something about it.
I love that, yeah.
And so if we go back to creative industries, it's like all these little pockets of experience in the creative sector that has like laddered up into like this whole effort that's materialized into the enactment of the creative industry law, I would say.
I love that you mentioned curiosity too, because parang as a leader, you need, I guess, first to be humble enough to give yourself access to that curiosity. Mm-hmm. Parang, it's just really amazing how, you know, if you sincerely ask someone a question and you're honestly curious about it, parang it really opens up like a way to connect. And it's kind of like how this podcast was started. Parang I was kind of like, hey, you know, if I really ask someone, we were doing a docu-series way back and we're just meeting a bunch of people, and I just really wanted to know like what their backstory was.
Yeah.
It's parang,
diba they say parang there are 5 ways in which you're able to learn.
Mm.
Diba there's the classroom, or academics in particular. You know, there's travel, there's reading books, and then there's experience.
Yeah.
And then the fifth is conversation.
Conversation.
Mm. And I learn so much from just like talking to different people, and I get an appreciation of all of these paradigms and worldviews that I'm able to put together to come up with, you know, policies or proposals or even programs in the district. I'm very excited about like our upcoming creative residency program. It's mm-hmm. the third wave of Anak Banwa already. We have 4 artists/creatives who are coming over to immerse. And we have our Pandaragupan collaboration with the Linangan Arts Residency of Cavite.
Let's touch up on that quick. Like, what is a creative residency?
We rebranded it into a creative residency, but it's usually arts residency.
Arts residency, yeah.
And this is a concept that I learned from Dindin Araneta, who, of course, co-manages Art Fair and Art in the Park when she was over in the Gupan 2 years ago during the pandemic. And when we walked through this creative hub, she said, "Toph, why don't you do an arts residency here in the Gupan?" And I was like, "Okay, game, but what is that?" please say more. And so, apparently it's an opportunity for artists to apply, and when they get in, they can immerse in a place, of course, experience the environs, meet the local community, be able to collaborate with other creatives as well, and then, you know, come up with an exhibit at the end of
their
stay.
There's
an output at the end, or a culminating showcase. And so we started this in 2021, and then now we're on our third cycle. And then we started Galila Arts Festival this year in the district. Because, I mean, while we have our cultural festivals that are managed by our local government units, parang there was no festival that's dedicated to the creative space.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started the Galila Arts Festival this year, and then it's coming back next year, where, you know, we brought drag to the Gupan.
Mm.
We brought like improv, like Spit came over, and then, you know, you had all these like senior high school students in the special program for the arts, like learning improv.
You know, that can't be understated. Like, just imagine someone in that audience just like remembers that day where they got to see drag, where they saw improv, where it's not usually brought there, di ba? Parang, how awesome, di ba? Parang,
yeah, and then for an artist or a creative to be seen, that really goes a long way, di ba? So, no, it's just so exciting, and but all these like novel concepts, like really, I got through like conversation and experience, and you know, attending a talk and like learning about this whole thing, and you know, actually having the scrappiness to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
What do I need to do? Yeah. So it's been fun. Parang my world now has, I guess, synergized. Parang again. Let me say that again. Parang I've been able to synthesize and synergize all my different sides.
Yeah.
Into mm-hmm. what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
So it's been amazing. It's my last 2 years. So glad just you're go doing for what gold.
You're, I'm glad you're in gold. The position where you are. So really looking forward to it. Okay, quickly lang, you mentioned kanina South Korea and the different countries, and I'm just curious because it comes up a lot on the podcast. Like we talk about Bangkok, about Korea, ganyan with their entertainment industry. Mm. I wonder lang for you, you know, were there any inspirations of what other countries are doing in their creative sectors?
Oh yeah, I mean South Korea is our Lodi.
Lodi.
Like they were able to really just get their act together. And actually it's funny because like before the pandemic, or like right when you were about to get into the pandemic sometime in March, doon nag-premiere yung Crash Landing on You.
Mm.
And it was number one on Netflix, and I don't really watch K-drama, but okay, let's check it out, and wow, I got hooked. Not in K-drama, but sa Chloe. Yeah. I got hooked sa Chloe, and then eventually I watched a few other K-dramas. And I thought this whole K-drama thing happened overnight. Apparently not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1997, Asian financial crisis, then South Korean president Kim Dae-jung was sort of challenged as to how to move forward with reviving their economy, because their number one economic driver then, which was manufacturing, was lost to them. Of course, went to China. And so they had to find a new way forward. How do you build back better after a crisis or a pandemic, or of course, pandemic now, but mm-hmm. back then, a financial crisis. And they decided to invest in their content industries. And then, you know, decades later, like, you know, Crash Landing on You and BTS and
Hallyu Wave,
Blackpink, yeah. and this whole Hallyu Wave has really matured to the level that where it is right now. And they're now reaping the benefits of an intentional policy shift on the part of their government. Mm-hmm. They provided an enabling environment for the private sector to come in and really work together to be able to bring South Korea to where it is now. So hindi siya aksidente.
Mm-hmm.
Diba? Pinagplanuhan nila to.
Yeah.
And parang that's something na was also a rationale for like lobbying for this creative industry.
Yeah.
I mean a creative future, we can't just leave it to chance, diba? I mean, we have to plan for it. Hindi siya pwedeng happenstance or arbitrary or parang everyone's just like throwing something into the wall and hoping that something sticks. Diba? There has to be like a roadmap on how to grow the sector.
Yeah.
And so...
And I think also, tama nga, in terms of policy, there has to be, you know, a shift in policy for that to happen. It's not like, you know, one filmmaker will come up with a really good film and then that's gonna change everything or... I mean, of course that has to happen, but... There's like so many ways it has to like integrate into society.
Exactly. Like, kunwari, how do you revive the film industry? It's sort of ailing right now.
Yes.
Diba?
Yeah.
I mean, digital and the pandemic also really disrupted the cinema going habit of Filipinos.
Yes.
And then now, like, everyone's waiting for everything to be available on streaming platforms.
This is literally the conversation I was having last week. I had attended like a film production workshop with Bianca Balboy, and then we all kind of like.
I worked very closely with Bianca throughout the pandemic, lobbying for like film policies.
yun talaga pinag-usapan namin, like, how can we make a living as, you know, filmmakers in this country, parang.
Yeah.
So a lot of like ideas were being pitched.
Oh, one, amusement tax. That's 10% on gross earnings.
Mm-hmm.
It was 30%, reduced to 10%, but really now it really has to be abolished because performing arts, live events, and film is just trying to get back on its feet.
Uh-huh.
And if LGUs levy 10% amusement tax on your gross earnings, already it becomes a deterrent for, you know, creative stakeholders to mm-hmm. create.
Is that another reason why, like, concerts and performing acts, when they come here, parang it's a little more complicated?
Yeah, I mean, actually, amusement tax. Like, why would you tax amusement? Parang it's such a regressive concept, diba? But anyway, it is in the local government code, and that needs to be abolished. Two, you need to be able to incentivize, kasi parang right now it's ailing eh. I would say it's a state of emergency for the film industry. So you need to be able to incentivize malls, for example, to exhibit Filipino films or original Filipino content. And right now, the only protectionist policy in place is the Metro Manila Film Festival, in which there's now a summer edition that no other films can be exhibited during this period. But then, you know, these actors, by actors meaning these economic actors, meaning the malls, they also have to kasi to earn their keep, diba? They have to be able to churn out an income. So their actions need to be productive or choices. And so if a film's not making money and they're losing money because of that, edi parang sometimes their hands are tied. And that's why incentives need to be in play so that they can be empowered to also help creators. And then third, education. Parang film needs to be integrated into our K-12 curriculum. I mean,
wow. Yeah.
Like these learners, when they graduate, will be the future consumers of creative content. And I'm not just talking about film, also books or even plays. Yeah. Or but any creative
output. We're just talking about the film history of the golden age of cinema in the Philippines. And that is like a really, you know, rich topic to bring up for young people, right?
Exactly. Or to be able to talk about issues or learn about society and life through film. Because films, when they are products of their time, they actually reveal so much of society then. So it's a good way to, like, you know, seed history or certain ideas or concepts to the youth. Right? And then, of course, film incentives. There's not enough budget in the Film Development Council to provide incentives to local or even foreign creators to shoot here. But what we learned is that the ROI, or return of investment, on film incentives is 1:9. So meaning to say, if government invests 1 peso on a film incentive, 9 pesos will return to the Philippine economy.
Okay, wow.
But because there's a cap to our film incentives program with the Film Development Council, because there's not enough budget being channeled to that agency, we lose out on so many opportunities. Like an Avengers franchise was supposed to shoot here, but because our film incentives were not competitive, we lost the account to Thailand. So sayang, they were going to spend 1 billion pesos in our economy, and they were going to provide a lot of jobs to film workers. But because of that film incentive program, alas, diba?
I think some countries have like a good rebate and a din. Like if you spend in their country, like you get a big percentage back. And
exactly. So there's that. And then of course we need more micro cinemas and cinematheques across the country. And hopefully that can be, I would say it starts off with subsidy, but at some point our creative institutions need to work towards a sustainability model. They have to be self-sufficient. And that's why when I was talking to the Cultural Center of the Philippines just the other day, when they were presenting their budget, parang I was encouraging them. Of course, now it's doing a 3-year renovation program, diba? But once it's open again to the public, they have to be able to find a way to be sustainable so that they don't rely on annual subsidies from government, because these can go to other things. And they have the assets to make their institution sustainable. Diba? Parang it's like using design to make Cultural Center cool again, mm-hmm. and then encouraging more people to come. More
screenings and
more screenings. I mean, the National Theatre in London is so part and parcel to everyone's daily life that they go there even if they're not gonna watch a show.
Yeah.
Because there's like a cool cafe, there's a cool bar, it's just a cool place to hang out, and there's a cool bookstore. Parang there's so many things that you can do to make cultural institutions self-sufficient and sustainable. So parang I think this is something that we kind of need to work towards.
How about, I'm curious then about like IP rights, intellectual property.
Yeah.
Maybe if you could just skim over that quick, no. But that was also one of the pressing issues we were talking about, because I think in other countries, parang when you come up with something, it's like automatic na parang the author of this story or whatever. It's like sa kanya na pupunta yung residuals and everything. But for here, I think it's kind of like difficult for an author to kind of secure IP rights.
Yeah, we can't have a vibrant creative economy if we don't have a strong intellectual property regime. And our intellectual property code is long overdue for a revision. And bills have been filed. It just hasn't laddered up yet to an enactment of some kind of amendment to the law. In fact, the section on geographical indicators, which is an instrument that is used to validate the provenance of a certain whether ingredient, mango from Guimaras, mm-hmm. or pangus from Dagupan, or whatever it is. Parang the implementing rules and regulations were just released late last year, and the law has been in place for more than a decade. So in the film space, and this is precisely why we are championing the Eddie Garcia bill. It's been passed on third and final reading in the lower house, and it's now in the Senate. The ball is in their court, and Sina Dolly De Leon were recently there, made representation in behalf of the Eddie Garcia bill, because parang we want the inalienable right for creatives to participate in royalties and intellectual property remuneration. Because there are only two ways as a creative for you to earn. One is professional fees. Two, it's royalties. If you don't have royalties, that's 50% of your income gone. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if you are a creative and you're talking to hiring parties or employers, potential employers, then you're at their behest, because you're negotiating from a paradigm in which you just really want the work. So if there are rider clauses where you sign off your royalty rights in the contracts, diba? Parang it's really sad, because fine, you can get some kind of hefty fee for this project, but it's not always going to be that case. And that's why you hear of all these like big stars na medyo not as big anymore, pero, and then now you see them like struggling, and yet their films or their series are still being aired, or are finding themselves on Netflix and streaming platforms, but they don't get anything. And I think that's why there's a SAG strike,
yes.
Diba? In the United States. So, I mean, a lot needs to change with IP, because that is the key differentiator of creative industries from non-creative industries, but maybe use creativity to increase their productivity. It's IP. So we can't have creative industries if we don't have like Filipino IP and protected Filipino IP. You know, it's killing the film industry, with piracy. Like, I remember the Metro Manila Film Fest 2020. This is the pandemic version where it was being aired in the Globe platform. Within days of being available online, the pirates came in and were selling links to the films for like 10 pesos, 20 pesos. But a ticket is like 250 pesos. So already you're killing the revenue stream of creators, diba? Even there was a report I remember December 2020 when even indigenous weaves were being counterfeited, yeah. and there were contraband weaves that were flooding the market in the Cordilleras. So we had to launch an investigation also on that. How did that happen? And that kills the output of the indigenous peoples and indigenous cultural communities. So, I mean, there needs to be a lot of adjustment in the IP space. But also, on the positive side of it, and really for me, this is the future of creative economy. Because people always say it's digital. It's like leveraging on artificial intelligence, leveraging on Industry 4.0, and you know, new technology, which even the performing arts can benefit from. Like, of course, Mula Sabuan was able to do a pro shot of their show and then sell tickets to it online and in cinemas. So it extends their productivity and revenue channels the same way that National Theater is able to do for their shows. I mean, sure, there's benefits in digital, but for me, the future of creative industries is really an intellectual property ecology. And there's this concept, German concept of Gesamtkunstwerk, or the totality of art, which is really all these different fields sort of synergizing and working together to be able to boost and increase their productivity. So I remember last Friday, I was at the Women in Business Summit. I was a panelist in one of the talks. And it was supposed to be the launch of Creative Industry Month, pero binagyo. So hindi natuloy, September 1. Na-move to September 3. Pero natuloy yung Women in Business because it was a private event, private sector event. And I met the CEO and president of Enchanted Kingdom.
Okay.
And I told her, you know, I always mention you every time I talk about intellectual property ecology. Because they're like, huh, what's that? Sabi ko, until such time that Trece or Darna or Captain Barbel has their own land in Enchanted Kingdom or Star City, we have not reached the full potential of Filipino IP.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
because, yeah. ano eh, look at MCU na lang eh. I mean, oh, that, it started out as a comic and then naging video game and then naging film and then naging MCU. And then ngayon may mga, I saw my apps and Oof. Then they have their own land in Disney, tama ba?
Yeah.
So talagang they're really able to milk the IP for for what it's worth insofar as synergies with other creative sectors and creative fields. And for me, and this is something we're going to work on next year as part of Malikhaing Pinoy, like we want there to be more opportunities for creators to be able to really pecha kucha and really just like, you know, jam, collaborate, and provide a platform for creators to pitch their content to other creators. Because, like, imagine, like, sort of a future where, you know, you go to a restaurant and there's a special menu inspired by, like, One More Chance or, like, some kind of Filipino film or some fashion collection, you know, that draws inspiration from, you know, a graphic novel.
They're all, like, brought up together.
Diba? Or, like, more books being turned into plays or musicals, diba? And vice versa. Mm-hmm. Or more comics becoming, you know, animated series or, you know, films.
Yeah.
Diba? Parang there's so many avenues in which we can collaborate and help each other out. And we're talking about 73 creative industries here.
Man, I love that we touched up on this because it's such there's hope, you know. It's there's a lot of hope that, you know, people like you in government are thinking about these things, these really pressing issues.
Yeah.
And yun parang I think it affects the mindset of the creative because eh, kita mo din yun eh. Kunwari, like we mentioned earlier, if like a big studio buys an idea from someone, parang masaya na siya kasi at least na someone paid attention to their idea.
Yeah,
but if you value yourself as a creative in the long run too, like you'll see that you should give yourself like more access to like long-term, you know, wealth and everything.
Correct.
But I guess maybe I'll just segue to the end of, you know, or just the last few questions. And I always notice that you end your posts with hashtag the future is creative.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, let's look forward to the future, diba? Parang I think talking about mindset of the value of the Filipino, like how do you think or what is your hope for like this like stigma of creatives in the Filipino? Kasi diba, we're always thinking na parang, ay, wag ka pumasok dyan, wala pera dyan. Diba? Yeah, what is your hope in like changing that mindset? Like, there was a goal, diba? 2030.
Yeah, 2030 is the goal. We'll be the number one creative economy in ASEAN. But yeah, I think, yes, it's also wanting to change that mindset and providing a more sustainable way forward for creatives. If not for the present, then, you know, the future crop of creatives. We want to make it sexy for them to get into the creative space. And when they make that revelation to their parents will be so excited because there's so much joy and pride in, you know, being a creative. And, you know, I guess the law is there to be able to help enable that future. It's, you know, providing the strong institutional support for the creative sector, mainstreaming it in the priority list of government, and allowing private sector to come in also and support, you know, creative stakeholders. So that's why I always say the future is creative, because, you know, creativity is sort of like a cousin of innovation. And it's always future-centric. It's always imagining, diba? Your vision boarding, diba? That's the whole essence of creativity, diba? You're creating something that has yet to be created or formed. So it's really future-centric. Whereas, of course, you have heritage also, which is past-centric. And I guess culture is sort of like the present that heritage and creativity sort of try to negotiate their place in. And, you know, there has been this uncomfortable relationship or tension between heritage and creativity. Because, again, one is past and one is future-centric. Past moving to present and one present moving to future. But actually, as was revealed by, you know, a lot of creative output recently, especially like the Vogue Philippines issue with Wang Od on the cover, or, you know, this push towards, like, you know, artisanal craftsmanship and, you know, circularity, sustainability, upcycling, and, you know, all of these, like, developments in fashion. Or even, you know, films that are being produced that are Filipino but are finding, like Kunay 13, diba? Or content that's like Filipino but is finding a voice in the global stage, the same way that Korea is creating from their culture and their heritage, and yet is finding resonance with Filipinos and other consumers of Hallyu. It's that we have to celebrate our heritage and our culture, because heritage in our culture is our comparative advantage. And that's something that creators, I think, are starting to really discover. It's those chefs in Taste the Nation that are really embracing their Filipino cuisine and like saying that, no, we're here. Filipino food is amazing and it's worthy of a Michelin star, and one has successfully gotten one. It's about the hyper local becoming global.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where we are right now. And digital, while it may have been perceived before as like something that, oh, may cause job displacement, or, you know, especially with artificial intelligence and AI, parang, you know, there was so much threat that it posited, but there were so many opportunities that it unlocked as well. Like sometimes now, parang creators can have their own platform to become known, as opposed to, like, for example, going through the mill of like star building or like trying to find a record company who will represent you. Now people can self-publish, so parang a lot of opportunities have been unlocked because of digital, and we just have to really ride that wave. And so that's my challenge, really, to a lot of creators. It's to be able to create from your own personal space, what you're seeing in your own backyard. But if you can go deeper than the present and into the past, and into our heritage and what is inherently Filipino, you can create something that's even more special, that could stand out even more. And that's why I'm really excited about the other law that I championed recently. It was signed by the president, which is the cultural mapping law. Because what it does is it takes stock and inventory of all the cultural assets, the natural heritage and cultural heritage of our specific territory, and then excavates all of that information and data and then makes it available to the community. So can you imagine this present set of creatives with all of their, you know, design proficiency and then their, you know, exposure to online media and, you know, having the Pinterest, having all of this content that sort of elevates their creativity, and then having knowledge of their history and their heritage. Imagine what kind of output we can create, diba? As opposed to it being something that, you know, everyone is doing. Instead of it being something that's commonplace, it's something that becomes special. And that's why I always say na the future is creative, but we should not forget our past. Parang we have to be able to find a way to bridge that gap, because that's the only way we can rightfully take our space in the global stage, if we celebrate what it truly means to be Filipino. And we should go on that journey to find out what it means to be truly Filipino.
Damn, yeah. I think that's a perfect way to end the pod. That's what a beautiful way to end it. And Toph, I'm really happy that you came on. And I just think it can't be understated, you know, the work that you're doing, and the bills that you're authoring, parang just the security that we have as creatives looking in the future, it just can't be understated. Parang it can really, you know, if you feel secure about pursuing this career as a creative, it just, you know, makes it a lot more exciting to work and to focus on your craft. So thank you for, you know, the work that you're doing, and look forward to the next 2 years. So
thank you. So much work to be done, but yeah.
So yeah, go down. Is a busy guy. So thanks, Toph, for being on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
So that was it. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Please remember that we really love it when you guys engage with the content in social media. Feel free to tag us in your stories and share anything you've learned about these episodes. We super appreciate it when you guys do that. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Kwentong Creatives and on TikTok at kcreatives.geo.
It isn't in the dance.
No.